από την μπάρα! Κάτσε κάτω από την μπάρα! Κάτσε!
That's a clip of a Greek Olympian. He's a weightlifter. His name's Spiros Dimas. And that's a clip of him picking up 213 kilos at the 1996 Olympics. That's just one of the many clips that kind of thread through Greek culture. Yes, the Olympics are a big part of kind of the mythology of even modern Greece. But this particular person is still like very much active today. He's quite older, Spiros Dimas, this Olympian. He's involved in global and European federations of weightlifting. So, and he's been prominent in participating in local politics in the northern region of Greece and in Albania, where he's originally from. But we talked today to an author called Nikos Evstathiou, who is a journalist from Athens in Greece, who wrote what he describes as a narrative autobiography. Basically, it was a series of interviews with Spiros Dimas, this athlete, and they wrote a book called With My First Name, Spiros. But it was really a pleasure to talk to him, because Nikos is a really erudite, but also very, you know, explains things clearly, and he's been doing a lot of good work in Athens with LIFO magazine. He'd worked at the national newspaper Kathimerini before that. So thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoy this conversation.
Thank you so much for the invitation and for the festival. It was such a heartwarming and wholesome experience for me to share my book from Brussels. And I'm really happy to continue our conversation now. It's been a little bit more than a year now since the release. We released in October 2022. And I got to tell you, the most phenomenal part of presenting this book with Spiros Dimas alongside myself and other speakers is that we've gotten to travel in different parts of Greece and to really present a book in the countryside, which is something that is quite rare. And it's not really something I'd envisioned in the beginning, but it really makes sense because he's such a popular figure. So we've gone to travel to so many places, towns in northern Greece, in Chios. We're now arranging some presentations in Drama. So really, that's been phenomenal. We're also working on the English translation to follow up with what we had talked about in the Brussels event. And yeah, it's been really quite exciting to see that a year on, the book still reaches audiences and we still get to push it and travel and share Spiros' story with different parts of Greece. And it's really a phenomenal feeling.
How exciting about the translation, though. How is that process going? You said, I think you mentioned here, but of course, I mean, not everyone was there at the time, that it's you might be helping, but it's someone else that's doing the actual translation.
Yeah. It's collaborative, but due to me having a little bit more time to delve deeply to more freelance projects, I decided to take a stab at it myself for a big chunk of the book, which is quite a novel, a new experience for me. I've never done translation work for publishing, even though it's really inherent in the job of a journalist, obviously. And in my own tale, I think as someone who's weirdly bilingual, not exactly raised as an English speaker, but really received all of my education in English from high school onwards. And I lived in the US for quite some time. So I tend to think sometime in English or write in English before I then translate it in Greek. So it's been a nice process to take a stab at it. And the other nice thing about it is, obviously, as every author, you kind of dread your work for a while and you don't really get to read it again. And I'd read some parts when we were doing the audiobook and I was recording parts of the narration with my own voice, but not the entirety of the book. But now getting to translate, you really dig deeply into your own work in a way that I hadn't done since writing it. So I was quite scared of that process, but it's been really lovely. And to get sort of back to the same mindset is revealing parts about the book that I had almost forgotten. Even though I've been traveling and speaking about it and thinking, I hadn't been pondering about the subject of the book as deeply as you do when you start translating it.
Did the publishing house say, you know, this should be translated by X because they work with X, or it was up to you? They didn't, no one interfered. It was really just your own personal process of how we get to an English version.
They asked me if I wanted translation help, and because so the other part, the other half of the translating process is Pios's own daughter, and I really wanted to keep the project sort of in-house because she's a graduate from Northwestern University in comparative literature, has a very similar sort of bilingual tale to me, and it's also her father's story, right? So I really knew that she would do it justice. Now she's really busy. So we decided to join forces and sort of split the work, and this is where we're at. But it was me that it was I that asked my publishing house to allow me, if they wish, to take a stab. And they warned me translation is something very different. We know you're very busy. But it sort of made sense with the project itself. And I have to tell you, even when writing the Greek draft, of course, not when working directly with Pyrrhus's narrative, which was in Greek, but when I was stitching it together, I caught myself often thinking in English or envisioning what this would be in an English translation. And the other part of the story is that I was sharing the book with my partner, who unfortunately doesn't speak Greek. So very often when I was writing it, I was translating it on the spot.
It's such a personal story that you had a chance to talk to this super athlete in such a personal way, and then for it to be continue that like through the translation, that's amazing, I think. Because it still keeps like both the chords of his family and your interpretation, and you're putting it down. Definitely you can speak to that, but then like definitely one of the first things I always think about when I think of this book is how it's like this weird constellation that brought everything together to make the like a perfect example of so many things in Greece. But how do you explain him to others? And then, yeah, of course, if you want to talk about the translating, but it's more like, how do you explain in English what he means to Greek society today, or to you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and it's something that does pop up in translation, right? Because it's different. It's very different to talk to a Greek audience who, as you said, collectively in Greece and abroad, would wake up at any given time or would turn the TV on when he was competing to see him weightlift. Obviously, an audience that doesn't have that affinity or attachment to him, it's a different approach. So it does touch on the translation. But in general, I think I pondered with this question a lot, and we sort of touched upon it in our discussion in the festival, because there's one easy way of attracting someone's attention about him, because he really is a world top elite athlete historically. So you can start by listing some of the achievements, right? So he's the number one Olympic medalist weightlifter in the history of the Olympics. So not just for Greece, but in the history of the sport itself. No one else has managed to get four Olympic medals. He's broken 14 world records in different areas that he's competed. So, that really gets someone's attention in the idea of, okay, this really must be a legend in sports. But as you said before, this is an amalgamation of many different things. So then we get to the other part of the story. So after you pitch it to an audience as someone who really is, the GOAT, the greatest of all time when it comes to weightlifting, you start talking about the actual tale of the human that lives that story. And that's a more complex tale. It's a tale of identity and migration. Piros is a member of the Greek minority in Albania, born under the Hoxha regime, migrating in the 90s as the regime was collapsing. So in his story, you have the duality of the migration history in the Balkan region. You have a minority that is suppressed, as were all Albanian citizens under a very brutal and kind of dystopic regime that I had to come, in contact with through heavy research and heavy archival research. And then the flip side of that, which is a Greek origin migrant coming from Albania at the time when Greece was facing migration really for the first time, and seeing him being treated as a second-class citizen all the way to the point where he finally made it to the 92 Olympics and raised the gold medal, and then everything changed. So there's a big part of this migration or identity belonging tale that I think a lot of people across the world can resonate with. And then, of course, the sports renders itself for good stories because it has a natural sort of storyline arc. And in his case, as is the case with many other athletes, you also have a rags to riches kind of storyline, which is very, it really pulls readers and they really relate. But where I think it gets even deeper and more relatable is seeing someone who ascends to this insane fame and adoration, and then continues to be humble and shares sort of the secrets of this life that is very hidden from our eye, the life of a top athlete that has to live with a lot of stress, that gathers up all of these successes, that gets to see the world through that lens. But he reveals it through such a sort of earthy tone and keeping his feet on the ground and with such modesty that it really becomes illuminating. I mean, to hear him talk about fame, to hear him talk about Greece in the 90s and 2000s, where all of this money is spent on sports, and he is able to see sort of with a critical eye how it's badly spent and badly managed. And Greece is sort of tiptoeing its way towards a crisis in many levels. It's kind of reflected in his reflections of that era. So yeah, I think that's what I would introduce. And then of course you have the personal side of the story, the woman that he really loves, that is throughout, is next to him throughout his life, the kids, the loss, sort of the difficulty of being a parent and an athlete. So there's a lot of human tales webbed into it. So I think this is really how I would sort of present it to a foreign audience. It's really the story of a superstar who means a lot for a small country and for his sport that might be kind of niche. But through this superstardom story, if you will, you get to see a very human and relatable tale about things that we really have to ponder about. Whether it's things like migration or whether it's things like loss, which are very personal.
I was born the year that he got his first medal, so I'm part of that generation that grew up with him and his story. But I was really young while growing up and hearing, you know, all his stories, his accomplishments, and then also the socio-political context. So I'm very aware of it. I'm very cognizant of it, but the actual themes I got to think about much later in life with my adult brain and interests, right? Mm-hmm. But it was a fascinating process to go back to these childhood memories. They're kind of foggy, but they're really there, and to make sense of them. So, of course, I remember in school kids parroting sort of insults about Albanians without us really even knowing what that meant, just because it was the general sort of sentiment in society, which was one of a simultaneous sort of albanophobia. So there was a sort of some narratives that blamed Albanian migrants or migrants for a lot of crime, for example, or things like that. But mixed with seeing, you know, a migrant population coming into your country and being starting from a place that's inferior, that's more difficult. So I think the general social attitudes were very different than what I've come to see today. Now, Albanians, I would argue, are one of the successful integration examples in Greece. People my age now, or that had migrated back then, they really are a part, a vibrant and prolific part of Greek society, and attitudes have really changed. But it wasn't difficult to kind of travel back to that era where things were different and more tense. Yeah. And to that note, I do remember, for example, the term Vorio Epirotes, Northern Epirotes. It's the term that the Greek minority in Albania uses to identify themselves. Yeah. I have to say it's kind of a charged term because there is an implicit irredentism in the idea of there being a Northern Epirus, Epirus being a region in Greece. But it's, of course, something that they self-identify with. I remember this term being thrown around when I was a kid and me thinking, oh, it's just another Albanian. I was oblivious, and I think many parts of Greek society were oblivious to the tale of the Greek minority in Albania and what that entailed. With my current adult brain and interests, as I said, but also with the understanding of where we are now, I go to do a little bit of a time travel in things that I was sort of subconsciously familiar with. And with a lot of archival research, I was very lucky because Peter's wife was a journalist herself, so she kept a really rich archive of all the newspapers and magazines of the time. But beyond that, a lot of my own archival research here in some Greek archives or online or through books, I got to get a sense of what that era really was about. And the very different attitudes and policies that were implemented across the board. Sports included, migration included, you know, this the general, all the themes that this book touches upon, I go to sort of get a glimpse of Greece at that time.
Were you prepared for how much research would go into a book? Like, what did you think?
Not at all.
What did you think, how long, I don't know if you had an impression of how long it would take, but what did you think would be the case? And what was the case in the end of how long this took, what it entailed?
Yeah.
How did you get lost in it, do you think? Or was it just doing another job where, okay, you stopped at five and you stopped at, how was that whole process?
I will tell you all about it. So I was very wrong in my estimate of how long it would take and also how much research would get into it. And this is because I'm a journalist, right? So we get to just churn out all these articles with a frequency that is insane. And I was just curating my website and I got to see that I get to write 3 to 4 stories per week on average, sometimes more. So by virtue of that, I thought to myself, well, you're used to it. You must be a good, you know, disciplined writer. So this should take you 2 to 3 months, which was completely wrong. And the other reason why I think I underestimated it is because Pedro started by sharing his life and immediately he shared so much and it was so wealthy of a narrative that I thought, okay, it's almost ready. Well, it was in terms of content and a story because it was his story, but so much work had to be put into it for the story to be done justice. And this is something I realized as I started working on the book. And I have to tell you the reason it was a big sort of punch in the face that I had to struggle with it more was particularly the first part of the book, which takes place in Albania in the 70s. And of course, I would hear his narration, but I even myself didn't understand the depths of what he meant. And I challenged myself to really put his story in context for the Greek reader, but also for the global average reader. I already put myself in a situation where I was digging and looking into Albanian sources about how life in Himara was at the time, just to juxtapose everything and get a sense of the real history and context at the time. And I have to tell you, his narration is so cinematic that I really wanted to put everything in its proper place. And then, of course, the second part that really came up really early on is that the format of the book changed. So initially, my publisher had asked me to publish a book that was more of a dialogue, an actual interview book, if you will. So my questions would be guiding his narration, but it wouldn't really be a biography the way I wrote it, which was an attempt to make it read like a novel. And somewhere in the beginning is where I realized my stories don't make sense. My questions don't make sense to drive the plot because the plot is so thick and beautiful and cinematic on its own that I think it's best if I assume the role of a historic objective narrator that occasionally picks into his brain to reveal some more emotions or things that I get from interviews by other people, his kids, his old coach. But I let him in the forefront speak as if he is speaking to the reader and not to me because he's doing it with such generosity. So that's where the book really changed because I took it upon myself to do the story justice with a lot of research. And maybe I went overboard in the research that I did. But I think it's because I, as you said, I got lost in it. I got really fascinated and I was time traveling together with him back to his own life. It was a very interesting process on the interview stage as well, because after, I think we completed the journey 3 times. The first time I'd organized his life and themes and times based on what I knew, and we went through it kind of superficially. But then when I started saying this is a deeper project, we went back a second time with some emphasis. And then when we did it a third time, just for the details, I realized that I had unlocked memories that he didn't even know he had in such detail. So I think it was sort of beneficial for both of us that we did this sort of taking a little bit more time. So then the project ended up taking around 9 months overall, which I still think is, you know, at the time I thought it was taking me forever because I was very stressed and working on a deadline. Yeah. But I still think I could have taken more time. What did end up happening is that after everything was collected and the story was very clear and the research was done, I did enter a writing frenzy where in a month and a half, I wrote 3/4 of this book. Wow. And in terms of the size, since you were asking me, when I realized this is becoming a narrative biography, I did try to aim for the industry standard, which is around 100,000 words. And the book ended up being 108,000 words. We did trim it a little bit because the publisher wanted a shorter version. But I think in the English translation, we will manage to put some of the stuff that was trimmed back in because it's also important for context. But yeah, overall, 9 months, very intense journey and really something that now I look back to with and I'm fond of it, but I think at the time it was very difficult.
So it's termed a narrative biography. I was going to say, so how do you describe it? So it's narrative biography, not just a biography.
Yeah, this is a term that I have found/coined through Googling because at least in Greek I hadn't found a book that was similar in the exact format, because you either have biographies that are written in first person, either by the people themselves or sometimes ghostwriters, but this is not what we did here. Yeah. And there is like a third voice, independent narrator, historical context voice that sort of takes you by the hand. So it's really not that. But then again, it's also not just a biography, because yeah, Piros was incredibly included in the project. I mean, we did a total of between 30 and 40 hours of interviewing that I transcribed. So, a lot of the heavy lifting was on me for once, because I had to transcribe it. But he was incredibly active in that process. And then I went back to it and asked him more questions. And his archives were very important. So I really call this project co-creation or collaboration, even if I did all of the writing process of it all. We both agreed that we don't want this to be my book about him or me just ghostwriting a biography. Right. We wanted it to be sort of a co-creation. Mm. And I think we achieved it.
After all of that, who did you think the reader of this book was going to be, and who in effect does it turn out that the actual reader is? Like, what's been the reception? What kind of feedback are you getting?
So that's a very good question, because I think the author always has to have the reader in mind when writing his draft. I have to tell you, I struggled with that question, because exactly Piros's life is something that belongs to every Greek, and every Greek had participated in a way or another to these very iconic landmark victories, but then also to other events mentioned in the book later on in his political career, the very tumultuous years for the Greek crisis, when Piros was in parliament, standing his ground against the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn group. I think all of these memories belonged to every Greek. It's a story that had to be told for every Greek. So I really tried to make the book very accessible. I tried to include sort of more dense historical information where necessary, or context, but I tried to weave it in a way that makes it very sort of attainable to everyone. And my goal really was for the book to read almost like a novel in its simplicity, because I really think that his story is a gift that has to be sort of accessed by every Greek, really. And I think that was a struggle, particularly in toning down some of the research components and how they're presented in a biography. I never wanted the reader to snap out of this feeling that you're sitting next to this Olympic champion who's really narrating on a low and personal and intimate voice and tone his life and tales.
The way of life in Greece and the conversations that happen that are quite open and can be philosophical. At the turn of a dime, is it? It feels like there's an openness of anyone ready to pick up this book. Is that how it's been?
You're very right. Yes, to point out that in Greece there is this sort of openness in society. We do have the tendency to sometimes leave books out in the open in the streets for people to get, like I know other European cities do, but it's a phenomenon you see in Athens or a lot of people going to bookstores. I do think that overall reading faces challenges nowadays with a pace, a very fast pace of life, and our attention spans shrinking and getting shorter and shorter. I think it goes back to the previous question of me trying to write something that is very accessible and almost popular, if you will, pop in that sense, which I think is a little bit of a taboo in literature. Sometimes we think of writing as something very elusive, something that has to be really kept from the public. So I wanted to make this book something that everyone should enjoy reading, from older generations that have seen this life unfold beyond their very eyes to reflect on it in a different way, but also for younger people that maybe have very faint memories or no memories at all of this person's life, just a familiarity with a name. In general, a comment about the sort of readership in Greece. I think it is a challenge, but I do see a fatigue with sort of fast-paced content around me. So I think we might be seeing sort of a turn towards embracing books a little bit more.
Looking ahead to the Olympics, being in Europe, in Paris, what do you think that will mean for the book and this conversation about a biography on an Olympian and for Greece?
That's a great question to end our discussion with something topical. So Paris will be hosting the Olympics this summer, very soon. What does this mean for the book and for Greece in relation to that? So I think the Olympics is always a time for Greece to reflect both on its sports history as well as its own history of birthing the Olympics, then hosting the first modern Olympics, and then the 2004 Olympics, which are very heavily featured in the book. I think the Olympics are, in their spirit, and we talk about this with Piros in the book, a fantastic thing of the global community coming together in a global truce, as was done in ancient times, to celebrate sports and the magic, the beautiful objectivity that they bring, that Piros was so attracted to in weightlifting for that precise reason, right? That despite differences and politics and things that really made his life much more tumultuous, when you're out there lifting weights, you're judged just by virtue of your performance. And there's something beautiful and magical about that objectivity. So I think Greece, but also the world, looking into this event, has to reflect and ponder upon the need to pose tensions and conflict, no matter how thorny it may be, to come together as a global international community. And in relation to another topical event that you mentioned, European elections, what I will say is that I think Piros really embodies a sort of European spirit of excellence, someone that's very virtuous, that strives for ethics and for a proper regulatory framework in his sports. He has really worked to build that as a member of the Anti-Doping Federation, World Anti-Doping Association, as well as a member of the International Weightlifting Association, trying to make his sport clean and also to promote sports across Europe. I think his life, as we said in the beginning of the conversation, it's a very Greek tale. It's a tale that Greeks are very familiar with, so I think it speaks to them to see all the details. But it's a very universal story with some values that really transcend borders, just like his life did.
We thank Nico for talking to us today. It's great to have another look at different types of books and narrative biography, as he calls it, and sports biographies are just super fascinating. And the process of how all this comes together using journalistic tools, that was also one of the key things that piqued an interest. So stay with us. Writefest.be is the website. You can find us on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. And we'll talk to you soon. That was our interview with Nico Evstathiou. I'm Alia Papagiorgiou. Keep writing.